Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 232 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, fresh off shooting a sub-80 round of golf, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Yeah, a little tired. I hadn't played 18 holes in 4 months, and it's a hot day down here in South Carolina, so it was good. It was nice to just go out there and just not be on my phone for a little bit. I feel like I'm on my phone, Twitter, and all that stuff way too much, and, you know, we've kind of got to be as sports reporters, that's what you want to call us, but you know, it's just always something, so it's nice to have a break from time to time. So it was good to get out there. Yeah, I played pretty good for that and played in a good time. So yeah, I was really enjoyed being out there on the course. So literally got in and hopped right on the pod.
Yep, I was ever texting you, and I was like, hey, we still good to go at 8:30? Like, yep, 2 minutes from home. And this was at like 8:23 or something like that. But how hot was it down there today?
It was like mid-90s.
Oh.
There wasn't a lot of humidity, though, so it was nice.
Oh, that's not bad. I remember playing a round of disc golf on the 4th of July. Me and my buddy, we were just kind of, neither one of us were doing anything. We're like, hey, you want to go play a round of disc golf? Like, yeah, it'll be a little warm, but we'll be fine. We actually played two rounds and regretted every second of it. I don't know why we started the second round. We were already miserable in the first round, but nobody was there. So, yeah, let's go play a second round. But, yeah, it's definitely not too hot here. It's been kind of like fall-like weather. I think we skipped over the rest of summer, and we're straight in the fall here up in Maine. But we have a guest on with us today, and he is from the, hey, if you call Ohio the Midwest, I'm not sure. That's kind of like in the West. Midwest. Okay. You might know him from Twitter. He is at @m_ski22. Martin Sokolsky joins us. Martin, how you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Good to talk baseball. Good to have you on here. You know, Martin is, you know, kind of joined the industry, started doing some writing here recently and doing great work. So figured we'd have him on, and just recently joined up with Pitcher to List, doing some dynasty content over there for Nick Pollock and Friends, which is actually the name of one of Nick Pollock's podcasts as well. No pun intended there. Didn't mean to do that. But yeah, so figured we'd have Martin on, talk some, I don't know how we exactly were going to call this show or what title we're going to use, but we're talking some undervalued kind of players that, you know, maybe you can consider keeping in keeper leagues that are flying a little bit under the radar, that maybe they could make a bigger impact for your fantasy teams in 2024. But before we do, let's get the usual housekeeping out of the way here. You can find all of us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. And, of course, Martin is at M_SKI22. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of Chris and I's personal platforms, TheDynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for all of our Dynasty rankings, prospect rankings, FYPD rankings, daily write-ups, trade calculator for Chris, a lot of other fun stuff. So go check those out. And, of course, check out all of Martin's work. You can find it all on his profile as well and over at Pitcher List too. So, but let's start with Martin's. For people that don't know who you are, just give a little background on yourself, your kind of path in just baseball in general, and path in getting into the industry.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I grew up in the Midwest, was born and raised in Toledo, Ohio, went to Bedford High School in Temperance, Michigan, so produced Joey Weimer. Obviously, we know that name pretty well.
Joey!
Definitely the most famous alum out of our high school. So grew up a Red Sox fan. Dad was a huge Red Sox fan growing up. My grandfather was a Red Sox fan. He caught the kind of the tail end of Ted Williams and caught all of Yastrzemski. Dad nice. Kind of caught the end of Yastrzemski and then suffered through the 80s and shared his love of the Red Sox for me. So I've hit jackpots 4 times in, 19 years winning World Series, but a big Roger Clemens fan growing up. That was my idol, still my idol. I love Clemens, even though he went to the Yankees, even though he played in Toronto. But as far as the industry, Chris is actually the reason I'm where I'm at now. Earlier, actually late last year, he posted that if anyone was interested in joining the industry, they wanted to write, they'll reach out to him and ask him questions. So I did exactly that, kind of set me on the path, kind of gave me some advice about different things and how to go about starting in the industry. So I started a Substack and started writing there. From there, I just kind of kept chugging along, putting together some content on my Substack. Recently, Matt Heckman, the Dynasty editor over at Pitcher List, reached out and said, hey, we're hiring. I'm interested in joining up. So effective Monday, this past Monday, I'm now a content producer over at Pitcher List, working on the Dynasty team with Matt and his crew. And I've got my first article will be coming out at the end of the month. So pretty excited.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. That's what I think, both Chris and I said this, that if you want to get into the industry, like, you got to get your work out there somehow, whether it's, even just like putting it on a Google Doc and sharing the link on social media, something, get your work out there. Cause obviously that's half the battle, is getting your work seen. So it's been great to see your progress so far, and we're happy to have you on. And I got a question for you though, going back to your fandom here. Obviously you said, your dad, grandfather, or any of them originally from like New England area? How did the Red Sox fandom in your family kind of come to be?
Yeah, so nobody's originally from the area. We're all from this Midwest, Northwest Ohio area. So grandpa just kind of loved the game. Like I said, he caught some of Ted Williams at the end of his career. So that kind of, that'll jumpstart anybody, right? And then seeing Yastrzemski through the 60s really, just kept him interested. And dad just picked it up from, where he's at. Grandpa doesn't really follow the team anymore. He's getting a little older and he gets easily annoyed by ownership and things like that. But it doesn't everybody, right?
Right.
But dad and I chat every day about the Red Sox, and he's super supportive of what I do. And my wife is super supportive of what I do. So it all started with a love of the game, love of the Red Sox. And it just kind of, here we are. So,
Yeah, awesome. I always love just hearing how people got into baseball, you know, whether it's a family member or just like a moment when they were a kid. You know, like I grew up watching it with my dad. My mom wasn't so much into baseball, but she always went to all my Little League games, even though she couldn't stand it. She said it was too slow for her. I played basketball too. She's like, that's more my speed. Basketball is quick. She's like, I couldn't, you know, I went to your games, but she's so supportive me. But yeah, it was my dad really, and my, a couple of my uncles too. But and having, you know, a double-A minor league team 15 minutes from where I grew up and where I still live, same area, that kind of fueled my passion for prospects and getting into that. Just going to double-A games when I was just a little kid and all that went along with it. So it's always fun to hear people how they got into, you know, not even just the industry, just got into baseball in general. I always love hearing those stories. But let's get into all of the players we got on the docket here. So we get a bunch of players that, you know, these aren't like names that are completely off the radar, but just some interesting names that we think could be just undervalued for maybe a deeper keeper league or guys that could take a step forward next year. We got mostly hitters on the list. We got a few pitchers at the end of the show, though. But let's start right in Baltimore with Joey Ortiz, who I think gets a little lost in the shuffle or a bit undervalued just because all the other kind of bigger, buzzier names in this system that we've already seen come up this year. Obviously, you got Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser would just option back down. You know, obviously Jackson Holliday coming up the pike, Heston Kjerstad. But Ortiz has been a very good prospect for a good bit now. Like last year hit 284, 35 doubles, 19 home runs, 8 steals in 600 plate appearances. This year hitting 343 with AAA Norfolk in just 73 games, 25 doubles, 8 home runs, and 10 steals. Where does he fit in? I think that's the question here. There's so many moving pieces in Baltimore, but what are your thoughts, Martin, on Joey Ortiz? Again, a pretty solid prospect, pretty undervalued. What are your thoughts on him moving forward?
Yeah, so I think ultimately for Ortiz, it's kind of going to come down to playing time, right? So we've got, you know, obviously we've got Gunnar Henderson at third base. Jackson Holliday is coming. Chris just put out a tweet not too long ago that Holliday could come up this year. Wouldn't surprise me. Baltimore's been super aggressive with their prospects, and he's the real deal. So ultimately with Ortiz, it's going to be about potential for roadblocks. I was looking through the contract situation for Baltimore. Mateo's coming up. He's got second year arbitration eligible. Urias is his first year arbitration eligible. You know, we've got Westberg. He's been all right so far. He's hitting around 280 or so. But for Ortiz, I feel like he's going to end up being a casualty there. I feel like he's going to get traded at some point in the offseason. I hope that's not the case because I'd like to see him get a shot. But realistically, the writing's kind of on the wall. For me, he's not a huge power guy. I think maybe 10 to 15 home runs. He's got decent speed. I don't know. I'm not sure that – I don't see a long-term path to playing time in Baltimore for him.
Yeah, that's the issue, is like where do all these pieces fit? I'm going to be really intrigued by what Baltimore does in the offseason. Like, obviously, they're, I think, ahead of their own, like, where they thought they'd probably be at this point in their rebuild. Obviously, one of the better teams in the American League this season. And obviously, went out and were buyers, got Jack Flaherty. But I still think they're at that one big pitching piece away. So I wonder if they go out and get, I don't know who. But if they go out and use some of these, all these good pieces they have that are, you know, either already up or nearly ready, and go out and get another big arm to add to, obviously, Christian Rodriguez and Kyle Bradish and all them. I think that'll really make them a contender. So I want to see what they do in the offseason. But maybe that's moving Ortiz or they move Westberg, Cowser. I don't even know. So many options. But, Chris, what are your thoughts?
I think Ortiz is highly underrated. He's one of the more impressive players I've seen this year live, actually. And I think that speaks pretty high volume about him. He's really solid in the field. I mean, he's a great shortstop. And I think he's going to end up being traded to play shortstop somewhere. I mean, we've seen him play at second base, at third base, just to try to get him time because that way he can find some playing time somewhere, but there's no spot in Baltimore. I will say I'm honestly a bit shocked that he wasn't part of a trade at the deadline. This seemed like, and maybe Baltimore feels like this is a year too soon, but I thought that they would utilize like players like Ortiz and Westberg to go get a Dylan Cease type. But I do think we can expect this move in the offseason. Baltimore's going to be a really good team for a really long time. but there's not room for all these guys. Ortiz, in my opinion, is going to be an incredible buy this offseason because I do believe he moves somewhere where he can get playing time. And that's why I think that he's a good stash now. If he's, you know, not rostered, if you can trade for him pretty cheap, I'd look to do so. I mean, his contact skills are insane. He's running a 90% zone contact rate in AAA, an 82% overall contact rate. Those are very good numbers. He's aggressive. He's high swing rate, high chase rate, but ultimately he hits the ball really hard too. His ninth percentile EV of 105.5 miles an hour is 2 miles per hour above MLB average. So you love to see that. Running an average EV of 91 miles an hour. There's just a little bit of a flaw where he just hits the ball on the ground too much. So he's not barreling it up very well because he has pretty high ground ball rate. But I saw him for 3 games when they were over in Gwinnett, about, I guess, probably a month ago at this point. And ultimately, he wowed me. He had a 450-foot home run, just absolutely obliterated. He had a 2-home run game, one of those games. And so I definitely caught him in a good time. But all the data kind of backs that, too. I think Ortiz is a really good player, and he's a really good buy right now. I know someone will fade him because he's 25, and he's blocked. But I do think he gets the chance somewhere outside of Baltimore pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that advanced age kind of has created a lot of prospect fatigue, as it has with a lot of other guys. A few of those we even talk about tonight. And yeah, definitely a great buy. I don't think there's a ton of upside here, but I think it's just be a solid ball player for a long time. And maybe that's in Baltimore. Probably not. We'll see. But definitely a good buy right now while the value is pretty suppressed. And that leads us into our next player, who's basically, we're saying, similar, different profile, but similar. He's old. He's blocked. This team does not want to play him for anything. And that's Michael Busch, who just continues to mash in AAA. Came up earlier in the year for a brief cup of coffee, more like a shot of coffee. And this has raked in AAA all season. Right now in, 84 games, slashing .321, .430, .609, 23 doubles, 23 home runs. And he's got a high walk rate. He's trimmed the strikeout rate a good amount this year compared to the last year. And he's now, I tweeted this out, like, it's probably a few weeks ago at this point, but he's over 1,500 plate appearances combined between AA and AAA. He played the entire 2021 year in AA Tulsa. 2022 was more AAA, but 31 games AA, 111 AAA, and then this year 84 more. So he's had a lot of time in the upper minors with pretty good results. You know, I know that's not everything. Defense factors in as well, and he's not a great defender. I get it, but
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Martin, you got to think that at some point, whether it's with the Dodgers or probably elsewhere, he's going to get a shot. And I still think there's a pretty good bat there. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's had 3 consecutive 20 homer seasons in minors. I mean, just 88% in zone contact rate, 111 max EV. I mean, he's got a plus hit tool. He walks at an elite level. He's got power to all fields. He's really an advanced hitter. I mean, by virtue of, I guess, 1,500 at bats, right? But my cons, I literally have on here, the organization hates him. They just won't promote him.
Very accurate.
And another thing too is he doesn't run well. He's not really a great defender. Although I did notice they've recently started playing him in left field in AAA, which is interesting because the Dodgers outfield is just kind of, it's just a bunch of middling kind of guys, right? So James Outman's kind of struggled a little bit. Peralta's older. You're just not seeing a lot of, I don't know, a lot of interesting bats out there. So maybe they're going to think about bringing him up at the end of the year and let him play in the outfield and see how that goes. But organizationally, I mean, you got Mookie Betts right now that can play second and shortstop. They can move him back out to the outfield. Muncy's on a team option for next year. They're still paying Chris Taylor, but they've got Kike is a free agent. I can't see him coming back there. Rosario is a free agent. JD Martinez is a free agent. There's going to be some spots that open up, but then again, Miguel Vargas is still there. We've got Gavin Lux coming back off the ACL injury. Miguel Rojas is under contract for next year. There's just a lot of blocks to him. But when I was looking deeper into him, he really just kind of reminds me of Max Muncy, right? Only he's a higher contact. It's a similar profile. It's just, are they going to give him a chance to play? That's kind of where we're at. And unfortunately, right now, he's not playing, and they just seem to hate him. He's just going to hang out in AAA for a while. So,
yeah, there seems to be no interest in playing Michael Busch. Like, that's what I was hoping, he was going to get traded anywhere at the trade deadline, and he trade him for an arm or whatever else they wanted to get at the deadline. I was like, trade him to Boston. I was like, here, I'll give you James Paxton. You know, they were looking for an arm. Obviously, the E-Rod thing fell through. Okay, we'll give you James Paxton. Give us Michael Busch. We're playing, you know, it's rotating cast of characters. Yeah, we got Story back now, but I was hoping he would just get dealt somewhere, because, like, I think there's a 260, you know, 25 plus homer bat in this profile. And if that's from second base, like, I think there's a path to him being a top 10 fantasy second baseman. Like, the power is absolutely there. He has shown that consistently. You know, I love the, you know, improvements with the approach this year. You know, walk rate still very high, K rate coming down a lot, which is very impressive. So I'm still like, he's a great buy low, because I don't think I've ever seen a bigger case of prospect fatigue. Like, this might be the top case of prospect fatigue. But Chris, I don't know. Are you still in on Busch?
Yeah, send him somewhere. Send him to the Pirates. I mean, daggum, like, wouldn't he just be a great fit in Pittsburgh? Well, he may kill his career. I don't know, but your tweet of the double A triple A, it was funny. I was looking at that earlier, actually. 913 triple A plate appearances. Zach Neto had 252 total minor league plate appearances. He had a fourth of Michael Busch's just triple A plate appearances, and he's going to be in the big leagues for the foreseeable future. It's kind of nuts. So you're right. Something's going on there. No clue what, but Busch should have gotten a shot. Would you believe me if I told you that Joey Ortiz had a better ninth percentile EV and the same average EV as Michael Busch? Because that's kind of crazy. Obviously, mm-hmm. Busch gets some more power because he hits at ideal launch angles. But
right.
Just so Ortiz can hit the ball pretty hard. Busch has good contact numbers this year, too.
Like, yeah.
He's very disciplined. His chase rate's 21%. Zone contact of 88.5%. Overall contact, 80%. That's really good for a slugger like this. So, you know, I'm pretty in on Michael Busch, pending he finds a spot to play, and hopefully that'll be the case after he goes somewhere else this offseason. We're going to keep our fingers crossed on that.
So here's a fun question I just thought of. Who reaches 500 career plate appearances first, Michael Busch or Ethan Salas?
I hope so, Michael Busch.
I hope too, but like, that's actually becoming tough question to answer at this point. Probably it's gonna be Michael Busch, but just hopefully he gets traded anywhere. Kansas City, I don't even care. Oakland, I don't even give a crap where it is. Anywhere but the Dodgers, so he can get some time, because this is like a really good bat. That's why I've kept him even through all this prospect fatigue and how he's he 26 now? Is he still 25? He is. He'll be 26 in November, so he's kind of like camped out in like this 50 to 70 range of my rankings for a while now. And I'm still definitely buying. Hopefully I can get him at a pretty cheap cost if somebody that has him in my dynasty league is, you know, just fed up with waiting for him. But next guy on the list here, go over to St. Louis, to a guy that has absolutely just crushed baseballs all season. And another guy that's pretty blocked, but all the cast of characters they have there in St. Louis. And that's Lucan Baker, who is 26. He turned 26 back in the middle of March. And he has 33 bombs in just 84 games down there in AAA Memphis at 21 last year, 26 the year before that. Like, always has hit for power, you know, good walk rate, average kind of wasn't that great in the past, but this year hitting 334, which is very good, obviously, but only 9 games and 28 plate appearances with St. Louis. Are you in on Luken Baker? Obviously, he's another guy that's a little bit older, pretty blocked, kind of not sure where he fits into the long-term picture, Martin. But what are your thoughts on Luken Baker?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not really a big fan of his profile. There's a lot of swing and miss in his game, although his walk rate this year is astronomical, almost 19% in AAA, which is crazy. I just think he's kind of one of those quad A players. He may get a little bit of a look down the stretch, especially with, you know, Goldie's getting a little older. He's not really had that great of a year. The Gorman injury is intriguing for Baker. He just might sneak in here in this. Goldschmidt's on the books for $26 million next year. You got to think they're probably going to keep bringing him back. I can't see them trading him unless they're really serious about starting like a mini rebuild. With Gorman's injury, so assuming we can put Goldie at DH next year, just hypothetical. With Gorman's injury, is Gorman going to move to first base and block Baker even further? Burleson can play a little first base. Like, I don't see a real clear path to playing time for Baker. He's just not really my favorite profile for fantasy assets. He's not really on my radar at all, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, as long as they just don't block Jordan Walker, that's all I care about. Just don't screw with Jordan Walker. We'll let the other pieces fall into place here. But yeah, it's interesting to see because, you know, lately he's gotten two starts. He came back up on the 12th, five games. He started twice, both of which were at DH. And, you know, the other, you know, they've had Burleson at DH a little bit. It's kind of been a rotating cast there. But, you know, Gorman was there a little bit too before he went on the IL. So it's very possible. I could see him maybe, you know, slotting in, but this Burleson's actually been hitting kind of well or better of late. And obviously they have so many other names as well that they can't fit into that lineup. So, I mean, I think the power is intriguing. I just, even with, you know, the higher average this year, I still don't know like what the average looks like long-term in the major leagues when he's not in the PCL. So we'll see on that, but I don't know, Chris, what are your thoughts? Are you intrigued by, oh, he's not in the PCL, the IL, excuse me, but AAA in general, but what are your thoughts on Baker?
He kind of feels like Juan Yepez to an extent, like
yep.
Very similar profile of where it looks like he's going to like pop up and like, you know, take off. And I'm not saying that he can't, but I think the profile potentially needs to, you know, he's got to find a place where he can fit in, I guess, in the field, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I don't know where that fit is. He's going to be a DH. Like, what is he, I guess, is my question. And kind of, I mean, he's first base or DH pretty much only. There's going to be pressure on the bat to hit. But I do think he's interesting to an extent because he hits the ball really hard. He's quite disciplined from the standpoint of, like Martin mentioned, the walk rates are really good. It's kind of reflective in a low chase rate as well. And he makes a lot of contact in the zone. So his swing rate's pretty low, but he is pretty aggressive in the zone, which is good. He's 62% zone swing, so swinging at pitches in the zone and making a lot of contact in the zone. He's got 17% barrel rate in AAA. Like, I can't really ignore a number like that. It's pretty nuts in my opinion. So I do think that Baker has the potential to succeed with regular playing time. I mean, it's a lot of balls at ideal launch angles with, you know, really high exit velocity. So yeah, I'm fairly in if he can find somewhere to play, but I do think that there's a lot of pressure on this bat. I think it's one where you can get him for pretty cheap. Probably it may not cost you anything. He's probably a deeper league stash, but I do think with the opportunity, he's a potential like OBP and power type player that could be useful, especially in the OBP format.
But do you have any faith of him getting that playing time with St. Louis? Like you mentioned Juan Yepez, Alec Burleson, you know, a few other names I'm probably forgetting off the top of my head. Like it's been a big cluster of these types of guys that just, you know, they've gotten a little bit of time here and there, but ultimately have not been able to settle in as regulars. So I'm just worried that Baker's just another one of those guys. I mean, maybe he gets traded again. Hopefully a lot of these guys do get traded to better situations, but yeah, I'd have some intrigue. I think he could be, you know, again, 30 home runs over a full season. I think that's definitely possible, but I got to see him out of St. Louis before I have any faith in that potentially happening. But the last kind of blocked guy on our list here was actually called up recently is Jonathan Aranda, who is was hitting very well in AAA this year and really always has, but this year was probably his best year in the minor leagues. 339, 449, 613, 23 doubles, 25 home runs, 64 walks to 87 strikeouts in 95 games for AAA Durham. He's played a grand total of four games with Tampa Bay this year, 32 last year. Some lists, he's not even a prospect anymore because of the, you know, duration on the major league roster, but only has 102 plate appearances total. But again, where does he fit in? I know the kind of the situation in Tampa Bay might open up a little bit of flexibility here moving forward, but is Aranda a guy that you're still in on, Martin? You still have, you know, faith that he can somehow get time and be a good major league bat?
So I love Aranda. I'll start with that. As far as getting time, I don't see it in Tampa. I feel like he's a guy that needs a scenery change as well. You've got Yandy Diaz down there, you know, Brandon Lau, Paredes, Rayleigh. I feel like he benefit from an organizational change. I really like the profile. He's a monster. He hits the ball really hard. He's got power to all fields. He's a walking highlight reel. At the same time, he's also a very poor defender. We know the Rays like to do those awful platoons, which I'm thankful Kyle Manzardo got traded to Cleveland because at least we can see him play every day. Right. But I'm not sure that Aranda's going to end up being in Tampa long term, but I really hope he gets an opportunity to play every day because I think we're looking at a big time fantasy contributor. He's not going to run a lot, I don't think, but he's going to walk at a decent clip. He's going to get on base. He's going to hit a lot of home runs. And I just think if he gets into a different organization, one that values his skill set and will allow him to play every day, he's definitely a guy I want to stash for next year and beyond. So,
now, who are you higher on moving forward, him or Michael Bush?
Oh, I think I'm higher on Bush only because I just feel like the profile is better. I feel like I said, I think he's a lot like Max Muncy, only he's going to hit for a higher average. I think his bat to ball skills are going to be better than Aranda's, although I think Aranda could come into more power than Bush long term.
Gotcha. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Aranda's pretty interesting, but you know, it's just the frustration of the Rays just being so stacked, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously there's a lot going on there right now, and this situation will certainly affect a lot of people's playing time. And you know, Aranda did get called back up, so it'd be interesting to see like how much is he actually going to play, and you know, where does he fit in this picture? And I think those are the biggest question marks that need to be answered: is where does he fit? And that's kind of the case with all these guys. And that's why I think all these guys are pretty decent trade candidates, that they need to find their place and play consistently. The nice thing with Aranda is he's seen time kind of all over the board. We've seen him this year play first and second, played the majority of time at second. We've seen him at third base as well. I mean, he played some shortstop several years ago, some outfield. Like, he's kind of been all over the place. I don't think he's not a good enough athlete to play some of these positions. I've seen him. He's definitely not a good enough athlete. But I do think he's an interesting hitter that can find his spot in the field because I do think the bat is capable of playing. It's like a Michael Bush light type profile, in my opinion, where it's the low chase, the solid contact. His contact numbers are a step down from Bush, a few ticks down. The power's there. He actually has a pretty impressive average EV of 92.5 miles an hour this year in AAA. So that's pretty solid stuff there. The games I saw him, it was probably some of his worst game. Like, I was so unimpressed with him when I saw him live, but it just goes to show you, like, hitters are so streaky and you can't judge them off a couple live looks. I saw him for several games in Gwinnett when I went down there to watch AJ Smith-Shawver pitch. Manzardo actually wasn't good. Aranda looked terrible, and he had a pretty poor attitude, which is a kind of a big negative in my book. But he's actually, since then, kind of picked it up a lot and been really solid. So I'm intrigued. I do prefer Michael Bush to him, if you know, as Martin said too. But I like the profile. I'm intrigued to see what he can do. I think that if he gets regular at-bats down the stretch, we'll get to see more of what he's made of. And hopefully he does get some regular at-bats this final month of the season.
Yeah, and 3-for-3, I like Aranda too. I definitely do. I think Aranda's pretty solid, but I think Michael Bush is just like a little bit better across the board offensively. So I do lean Bush. But yeah, you got to wonder, with all the injuries Tampa has on pitching side of things, with the latest one, unfortunately, being Shane McClanahan done for until 2025, which I had so many McClanahan shares and redraft and dynasty. This is a real killer. Even I knew he was outrested this year, but yeah, this is a killer. But maybe they go and use some of these pieces to get some more arms this off season. We'll see. But yeah, Ronda's still one I'm holding on hope can kind of like similar to Bush, that can turn into a pretty solid fantasy contributor. Moving over to Chris's Atlanta Braves, Vaughn Grissom getting recalled with Ozzie Albies going on the IL recently. You know, and obviously, you know, Grissom was a trendy player both for a dynasty and in redraft leagues back in the offseason and into the spring. Was drafted, I forget where his ADP was, to be honest with you, but it was like one of those ADPs that was creeping up as we got closer to the season.
150-ish, I think.
150, okay, yeah. I didn't think he was getting closer to 100, but it definitely like top 200, 150 range. And then obviously that didn't work out. 19 games with Atlanta. You know, he hit .277, but wasn't really hitting for much power. But this is a .319 career hitter in the minor leagues over 315 games. Was hitting .327 this year with AAA Gwinnett in 88 games. Ton of doubles, 32 doubles, only 6 home runs, 11 steals, and nearly as many walks as strikeouts. So still pretty good numbers across the board. Chris, you know, I know you tweeted out earlier, so I know you're still in on him, but like, why are you still in on Grissom? Why do you think he's a good buy right now? And another question, like, where do you think the power ends up? Because obviously not a big part of his game, but it's kind of underwhelming, you know, over the last, you know, year or so. So kind of where are you at in Grissom right now?
Well, I'm hoping that I'm in on him because he's not in Atlanta. I hope that he's part of a trade, which I'm not sure if he will be, actually, but I'm afraid that he's going to sit in AAA forever. I mean, the Braves did sign Orlando Arcia to a 3-year extension. They saw enough in him to feel comfortable doing that. I mean, Nicky Lopez has been ridiculous on that, you know, pickup trade, whatever it was. It's an underrated move for them, and he's somehow unlocked something. Grissom has been really good for Gwinnett, and I don't think he, and some may say he's a quad A player. He's 22 years old. He's far from a quad A player at this point. He still doesn't have a lot of reps in the minors. I mean, think about it. I mean, he debuted in 2019, but he lost the COVID season. In 2021, he was in low A for most of the year. In 2022, obviously he went from high A Rome to double A and then straight to the majors because emergency. And I just think about where his value would be if he did not debut last year. So let's say Grissom never came up and never. And the thing is, Grissom performed pretty good, like with his time in Atlanta. Let's say that he had not debuted yet. Like, where would he rank as a prospect considering what he did in double A and then what he's doing in triple A this year? Like, people would rank this guy pretty high as a prospect because there's still a lot of intrigue. Yeah, the power hasn't been there. But you look, and the exit velocities have actually trended upward with him this year. And again, he's 22 years old, so like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he grows into more power. He's got the frame for it, and you mentioned the doubles. Like, he's seen a ton of extra base hits, which is huge, and sometimes we see those extra base hits turn into home runs over time. I mean, you look at the numbers, and he's got 42 extra base hits so far in 88 games. Like, those are really solid numbers there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being a 15 home run bat. The exit velocities kind of support that. I mean, his EVs are about average. And the barrel rate's not great, 5% barrel rate, but he makes a ton of contact. Like, the contact that he's making is just absolutely insane. He puts the bat on the ball so often. And he moves well enough. He's a good enough athlete to ultimately steal you bases. So I'm kind of in the boat that he can be like a 15-15 type guy long term. And give you a respectable batting average. The question is, like, will that be in Atlanta or not? And I tend to believe that it's not going to be in Atlanta. I don't think it will be, but I could be wrong on that.
Didn't Grissom get recalled 2 days ago, though?
He did. I mean, he sat on the bench both days since he's got called up. But
I misunderstood what you said. I thought you were saying that he didn't get called up. I was like, God, I saw that.
No, yeah, he did. Sorry, I was saying that. I don't think that he will flourish and play every day in Atlanta.
Oh, gotcha. Eventually. I totally misunderstood what you were saying there. So I was like, wait a minute, did he not get called up? But Martin, what are your thoughts on Vaughn Grissom? Are you a Grissom guy? Would you be looking to buy in dynasty leagues right now?
Yeah, I would still buy him on Grissom. Like Chris said, he's 22. He turns 23 in January. He's still a young kid. Didn't play at AAA at all last year. Obviously, jumped right to the big leagues. I thought he was fine in the big leagues. You know, the defensive struggles have kind of been the talk right on Grissom. He made 6 errors in the 19 games that he played in Atlanta this year. That's a concern when you're a major league team that's a perennial contender like the Braves are. I think that's more or less why he's in AAA. Is for the defensive thing. I don't really think that they feel he's ready. As far as the offensive profile, I definitely like I like his approach. Like Chris said, 87% in zone contact rate, solid discipline at the plate. I just don't think he's going to stay long term in Atlanta. I think he could, like Chris said, be part of a trade. But that's a good thing in the sense of he'll get a chance to really flourish and really show off his skills. He's got the great lineage, the family lineage. He's got definitely has valuable skills. He runs well. He's a very athletic kid. He's a big kid. He's 6'2", 210. That's a big shortstop. He's going to be just fine. Now, if he stays in Atlanta long-term, I think we're talking about a huge star just based on lineup context. When you've got Acuna, Riley, Albies, Murphy, Olsen around you, you have nothing but offensive, you know, power in your favor. So I really think that if Grissom stays in Atlanta, he's going to be a fantasy stud. But like Chris said, I just don't think he's going to stay there long term. But I'm definitely in on Grissom long term still.
I'll take him in Boston. I'll take Aranda. I'll take Bush. I'll take Grissom. Plug him right in at second base. I would love that. But yeah, I'm definitely selling on Grissom as well. You know, again, I think he's going to be one of those guys that just never stands out. He's not the sexiest name, but can give you 10 to 15 home runs. You know, 20 plus steals, good average, good OBP as well. And that's going to play. You know, maybe he's never a top 10 second baseman or even shortstop if that's where he ends up. But you know, if he's a second base, like he's a guy that could be like a top 15 option, like a back end, you know, starting option of that position, given his all around profile. And I still think there's a pretty high floor there as well. I know that it was very underwhelming in his debut, even though he didn't hit for a bad average. Obviously, he didn't do much else besides hitting for average. But I still think there's a pretty solid player here overall. And yeah, I think I definitely would be willing to buy low in dynasty leagues, because I think his price tag is pretty suppressed right now and maybe the lowest it'll ever be. But moving on here to our next name, we got Nolan Jones, obviously a guy that has come up and had some success, a lot of up and down numbers though with Nolan Jones. Obviously the power's there, but there's been some strikeout issues, a lot of ups and downs with him throughout the season, more downs than ups, but the overall line right now through his first 246 plate appearances this year, now, overall line looks pretty good. 275, 354, 505, 12 home runs, 7 steals. You know, got the great quality of contact metrics, over 14% barrel rate each of his first 2 years. Exit velo this year jumped 2.5 miles an hour, up to near 92 miles an hour. Hard hit rates kind of chilling in the mid 40% range. It was 45.2 this year, 49.1 last year. But the K's, 34.1% this year. Whiff rate is 32.6. This doesn't chase a lot, but zone contact's well below league average as well. This is a guy, Martin, that is one of the harder guys for me to value. Like, I have him in a couple of teams, and I had him through the hot stretches, but I don't fully buy in. Like, the K rate still concerns me, but does it concern you? Like, is Jones a guy you'd be looking to invest in, or are you kind of scared away by that K rate?
Yeah, so when I was looking into Jones before this, I didn't realize how much I like. There's just so many things that stand out in the profile. I mean, 115.3 max exit velo is 97th percentile. You know, the 15.6% barrel rate this year. He's got the Coors factor, right? So, I mean, he's got a 390 BABIP, which is clearly based on the Colorado playing in Coors Field. But yeah, there's a lot of concern related to the strikeouts. I'm wondering too, though, if he doesn't have the approach that Tristan Casas has, but he's kind of a victim of almost being too patient. If you look at him, he's a 20% K rate in the minor leagues. I'm just wondering if maybe he's a little too patient. Maybe that's leading to some of his strikeout concerns as well. The zone contact rate is low, but at the same time, Casas kind of went through that phase earlier this year where he was just kind of too passive. And I'm wondering if maybe a little bit more aggression from Jones could be beneficial for him. When he plays in Coors Field, we know how that plays out. His home road splits are fine. He's a plus defender, so he's going to get a chance to play every day. I just wonder if a few minor tweaks could get him there, but again, it's the Rockies organization, so we know how that goes. But overall, the profile's, it's exciting if there can be a little bit more focus on contact and a little bit less maybe passivity as it relates to seeing pitches. So,
yeah, I was actually just talking about this with some other people regarding Emmanuel Rodriguez recently and how he is just too passive. Like, he'd benefit. Obviously, drawing walks at a high clip is great, you know, but there's a thing as being too passive, getting yourself into too many two-strike counts, and maybe that, you know, produces a higher K rate than you probably warrant having given your approach. But, yeah, I would love to see this, a little more aggression from Jones. I never think he's going to be a guy that hits for a high average year in, year out, but I think there's 25, 30 home runs in this bat, and he runs a little bit too. I think he'll add, you know, maybe just 5-10 steals annually. I mean, he has 7 this year, so definitely there's a lot of fun in the profile. I'd love to see him trim the K rate a little bit. But, Chris, what are your thoughts on Mr. Nolan Jones?
I like Jones. I think Jones is pretty underrated. I haven't probably given him the respect he deserves. I do think there's a bit of passivity here that I'd like to see him be a bit more aggressive. And in some sense, it's fine not to swing. I mean, he's got a 41% swing rate this year, which is fine. I mean, it's low. It's not ideal. He's not chasing a ton, which is certainly a good thing. But he's also not swinging at all on like first pitch. His first pitch swing rate is incredibly low. So I'd like to see him be a bit more aggressive. Honestly, you look at the contact rates and they're, you know, I mean, they're fine. I mean, they're not ideal. They're a little bit below average, but it's the ball so hard at ideal launch angles that he can make this work. It's only going to play up in Coors Field, I think. Like, he could be a true monster, like, for fantasy. He's a pretty solid athlete. His ball hard. He's going to get on base. I think that Jones is somebody that is worth being on because he's still young. And, you know, I don't love him being in the Rockies org, but I think there's a chance that he can end up being a really solid player and one that's worth buying into. And I'm not really sure he's gotten the credit that he deserves. So I'm investing in him for next year. I think he's going to be a sneaky good buy in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, there's 30, you know, 15 upside here. Like, I actually was looking. Yes, he has an 81st percentile sprint speed. Like, he's even quicker than I thought he was. So, yeah, there's a lot of good in this profile. And if he's able to cut down the Ks, be a little more aggressive, I think there's a really good fantasy asset here for sure. And obviously, Colorado definitely helps that. Moving over to another outfielder here who's had, you know, pretty similar amount of time in the major leagues, and that's Kerry Carpenter with the Detroit Tigers, who for some reason just continues to fly under the radar. I mean, it's because it's Detroit, and if it's not Torkelson, Green, or Skubal, nobody seems to care. But he's having a quietly really good year. 286, 347, 521 slash line, over 285 plate appearances. Doesn't run at all, no steals in his career yet, but hitting 16 home runs so far. Good quality of contact metrics. Doesn't strike out a lot either. Doesn't walk a lot either, but keeps the K rate in check. Low 20% range, 21.8 this year. What are your thoughts on Kerry Carpenter, Martin? He seems like a, you know, maybe not as sexy of a profile as Jones, but still a pretty solid, intriguing profile all around.
Yeah, when we were finishing up on Jones, I just thought about what an outfield with Nolan Jones, Yankiel Fernandez, and Jordan Beck. How much fun could that be in Colorado?
That would be really fun.
Yeah. All right, so back to Kerry Carpenter. Yeah, so Carpenter is a guy I get to see quite a bit living in this area. I've seen him. I saw him on rehab when he was with Toledo, coming back from injury earlier this year. I mean, he's got a clear path to playing time in Detroit. They're a rebuilding club. He's going to get some DH at-bats. He's had quite a few DH at-bats since he's come back from injury as well. Obviously, Miguel Cabrera is going to retire, so that's going to open up some at-bats as well. If you look at his splits, his splits are okay. They're not great, but he's got no speed at all. He doesn't hit the breaking ball at all. He's a 213 hitter against the breaking ball. And he's got a really bad park factor for being a left-handed hitter. I looked at his splits. He's got 4 home runs at home this year, and he's got 12 on the road. I just don't see a huge upside playing in that park for him. He could hit 30 home runs on another team in a different park, but obviously he'll be in Detroit for a while. I think he's a nice player. He's a nice fourth or fifth outfielder, probably in a roto league, definitely an AL only piece. But as far as long term, the profile is just fine for me. I'm not real high on him, but like I said, a fourth or fifth outfielder in a roto league would be fine with me. So.
Yeah, I just recently moved him into my dynasty rankings here. And I think I'm too low on him. I have him in the 250 range, and that's probably too low. I don't know. Chris, where do you have Carpenter in your rankings?
He's ended up around like 200 overall this month's update. Like, I think Martin's right. He's fine. Like, he's useful. And I think that's where the value comes for me from these boring profiles. Like, these are the kind of players you need to be successful at fantasy. The guys that, you know, nobody really values that highly that gives you production. And that's what he's going to do. I hate the ballpark, but he's made it work. Like, you look and he has 16 home runs this year. I'm curious to look at the splits, though, and see, like, home and road. Yeah, he's got 4 home runs at home and 12 on the road. So, like, just bad. The ballpark's bad. 215 average and 295 OEP at home. Or, sorry, that's reversed, actually. He's 215 on the road, 295 OEP on the road. And at home, he has the 4 home runs. He's putting more balls in play and hitting 357 with a 403 OEP. That's interesting to see. But yeah, it's not a good park to hit in. He has good exit velocities. He has solid, you know, contact skills. He's kind of just like an average across the board dude that has some use for fantasy. So I like him, but don't love him.
Yeah, like you said, you need those guys. Sexy doesn't always win. Sexy might be fun, but if you're looking to win, which most of us are, Sexy doesn't always win. You need to have these kind of guys that help solidify your roster, and Carpenter definitely could be one of those guys. All right, moving on to a couple of catchers here, both of which I just put in. They're in my top 12 dynasty catcher rankings. And this first guy, Yiner Diaz, I have actually at number 9 now, and I think he could actually move up even more. You know, obviously the playing time hasn't been, you know, he's getting more playing time over the season, but still is not playing every day. But when he is playing, he's been very good outside of not walking much at all. You know, Yiner Diaz currently is slashing 273, 292, 520, 15 doubles, and 16 home runs in 76 plate appearances. You know, K rate's under 20%, but at the same time, he only has 6 walks this year. That is insane. Only see 6 walks, but a lot of red on the Savant, you know, profile. High barrel rate, good hard hit rate. Again, K rate's 18.8%. A lot of good in this profile, Martin. And I think he's still getting slept on a little bit here just because he's not playing every day. But I think this is a great profile to invest in. But what are your thoughts on Yiner Diaz?
Yeah, I love Yiner Diaz. I remember having a conversation with one of my home league earlier this year with a guy who's like, Diaz will never be anything in Houston. He's just not going to be. He might get some DH at bats, and that'll be about it. I think he's the catcher of the future there. They traded Corey Lee, who was another highly touted prospect in their organization. Maldonado turns, I think, 37 next year, and he's a free agent. So I think there's a pretty clear path to playing time for Diaz. I love the team contacts playing in Houston. Great offense around him. The ballpark is great. He's just he's never going to walk. I mean, he's a 5.5% walk rate in his minor league career. That's just not good. I think I've walked at a higher rate in slow pitch softball. but he also hits the ball on the ground a lot, which is concerning. 42.7% ground ball rate. So I think long term for Diaz, I think we're looking probably at like a 240, 250. But I think he's got 20. I think he's got 20 home runs in the bat, pretty easily, honestly. But I just don't think it's going to be, you know, an overly. Catchers aren't really sexy in general unless you're JT Realmuto, where you're running a lot, or Varsho when he was eligible and he was running a lot. But I think long-term, he's a nice piece. He'd be a good dynasty catcher to have. And even in single catcher leagues, I think he'll be just fine. I think he's the catcher of the future. And I think that's going to start next year when Maldonado's out of there. So,
yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And like the one alarming issue with Diaz, obviously because of the low walk rate, is currently a 45.5% chase rate, And for reference, MLB average is around 28.5%. So very high chase rate. But hey, zone contact rate is around league average. So, you know, XBA is actually higher than his current average. So I think he has the contact skills to make it work. I'd like to see him be a little more patient at the plate. But yeah, I like Diaz quite a bit here. I think he's definitely on the rise. Chris, what are your thoughts on Diaz?
It's the most interesting profile in baseball. You look and he, like you say, doesn't walk. He chases a ton. The bat's really good. Like, he makes contact despite swinging all the time. Like, give some of these swings to Nolan Jones, please, and Emmanuel Rodriguez. That would be really great if we could. He's a 61% swing rate. Like, that's overall. That's so many swings.
What was Jones again?
41.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty big difference.
There's not percentile numbers, but I dare say that very few swing the bat as much as Yandy Diaz. He's swinging like literally at every pitch almost. Like, and almost every pitch in the zone is like 80% zone swing. I'm actually going to try to find and see. Like, I'm going to look and see who has the highest swing rate. Dude, but yeah, I'm so interested in this profile. Like,
that's what I was doing right now.
Yeah, see if you can find it. There's some really good power. But and he's probably like 100 percentile, like swing percent. Like, he has has to have the highest swing percent or close to it. So interesting profile. But yeah, I mean, from a catcher standpoint, like, yeah, he gives you power. Like, he gives you everything you want. So I'm in on him.
Yeah, I'm not able to. Wait a minute. Did I just pull it up?
He's almost got that Bugs Bunny profile. Well, he'll swing three times at one pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that is the truth.
I couldn't pull it up in time, but yeah, he's got to be near the top of the list. And Jones is probably near the bottom of the list for sure. But yeah, I like it's really, and even like his defense. I know this doesn't matter, but like, you look at his savant sliders for defense, like framing, he's 5th percentile. Pop time, he's 89th percentile. It's like a lot of red, a lot of blue, a lot of various ends of the spectrum here for Yiner Diaz. But I definitely like the bat a lot. And same thing with this guy, you know, sticking in the AL West with Logan Ohapi, who's currently on a rehab assignment. Started that a few days ago, I think maybe on Tuesday, I think he started that. But you know, this is a guy that came up last year after the trade over from Philadelphia in exchange for Brandon Marsh. Hit .283 with 4 home runs in 16 games. Like, this guy I'm still very in on. And obviously, the injury was very unfortunate. He was a guy that was a trendy, you know, guy in Dynasty, trendy guy in redrafts back in the spring. And earlier this year, you know, 12.8% barrel rate, 93.1 exit velo, 43.6% hard hit rate. It's a guy that showed a great blend of both, you know, contact, approach, and power in the minor leagues. So I still think he's going to be a top 10 catcher long term. And I think both these guys are going to be very great options. But, you know, actually, who are you higher on, you know, moving forward, Martin? You higher on Diaz, you higher on Hoppy, and what are your thoughts on Hoppy in general?
Yeah, so I think for fantasy purposes, I'm probably higher on Hoppy. I just feel like there's less variance in his outcomes. I think he's going to be more solid long term. I do wonder about the injury. Labrum injuries are very painful if you've ever had one. I'm worried about the power. This year, I'm not so much worried because it's, you know, a small sample at the end of the season, but I do want to see how he bounces back after the offseason with that shoulder and see how the power comes around. So far in his rehab, 24 at bats, 375, no homers, but overall I love Ohapi. He's clearly the catcher of the future there. Team context is a little interesting. I mean, obviously there's a guy named Ohtani that's probably going to leave. Trout's getting a little older. Just kind of wondering how it's going to play out long-term with them. Their prospects, not the best.
But ultimately, I think, don't be nice. They're terrible. It's a bottom five system.
Yeah. So, I mean, their best two prospects are already on their team, right? Ohapi and Zach Neto. So I really like Ohapi long term, though. He's definitely a guy I've targeted in a lot of dynasty leagues. And I'll definitely continue to target him even in redraft leagues moving forward. So,
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think he's a good buy right now. It's always the time when you're going to get guys at the cheapest. It's possible that, you know, Hoppy's starting a rehab assignment. It's possible that he does struggle off the bat because of the injury, and it may create an even better buy-in opportunity on him in dynasty leagues. I do like Ohapi better than Yiner Diaz long-term. I just really believe in the bat, and what he's done. And it's funny because I remember 2 years ago at the AFL when we saw him for the first time, like, I didn't even know who he was at that point. And he's burst on the radar and had an awesome AFL. And since then, he's just like, you know, to the moon kind of thing with Logan O'Hoppe. I'm really in on him. I think he'll be a top 10 dynasty catcher. And I think that you can get him a lot cheaper than that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both these guys could be top 10 options. And yeah, I think maybe Diaz is a little more upside, but yeah, O'Hoppe is much safer, much, you know, more patient approach, much higher floor. So yeah, I think long-term, I think to give slight edge to O'Hoppe. Moving over to the last two names on the docket here, a couple of high upside pitchers that are, you know, currently out for the season, but will be back next year. I mean, hopefully that's the plan at least. Shane Boz with the Tampa Bay Rays and Max Meyer with the Miami Marlins, a couple of Florida arms here. I mean, I'm just really concerned with any Rays pitcher at this point staying healthy, but hopefully Boz got all of his out of the way. And obviously one of the higher upside pitchers in baseball. I still personally think that, you know, everything clicks. He can stay healthy. This is a fantasy ace in the making. We saw the stuff. It's elite. You know, the improvements he made, you know, trimming the walk rate, commanding his pitches better, everything he told me and Jesse and Jake back when we interviewed him, you know, back in, I think it was early pandemic, so like April of 2020 or whatever it was, he did, and it was very encouraging to see. But obviously being out for the entire year, only 9 starts in the major league so far. Do you still think, Martin, that Boz can reach that level? Like, are you, you know, concerned about, you know, investing long term due to the durability issues he's already had? What are your kind of general thoughts on Shane Boz?
Yeah, so Boz is actually my favorite player that we're going to profile tonight. Yes. My concern, obviously, there's some durability issues. I mean, the most innings he ever thrown in a season was 92, and that was in 2019, which included 11 innings in the Arizona Fall League. Obviously, there's a huge concern anybody coming back from Tommy John. But the good thing is the Rays can't get him hurt, at least on the Tommy John front, because he's already had it. So, but we haven't seen him since July of 2022. But at the same time, it was a number, you know, first round pick over, you know, in 2017. He's got 2+ pitches, the fastball and the slider. Both the slider and the curve have 40% or higher whiff rates in his limited sample in the big leagues. And there's going to be an open rotation spot in multiple open rotation spots in Tampa. Obviously, he's going to need some time still to work his way back up. But Boz is definitely, before his injury, I had him as a top 10 dynasty starting pitcher long term. Obviously, I had to drop him when that all broke down. But he's a guy that the profile I've always loved. Triple digit fastball, nasty slider. Just a big Shane Boz fan. So definitely in on Boz.
Happy to hear. Yeah, I've always been a big Boz guy. Like when he went from the intriguing upside arm with a lot of red flags to, you know, getting rid of a lot of those red flags, you know, a couple of years back. You know, very encouraging to see. And yeah, I'm just hoping as long as the health is there, I think I think we're going to be talking about him next year. Like we're talking about Grayson Rodriguez and Gavin Williams and guys like that this year. I think he's gonna get up into that conversation as like a top 15-ish dynasty arm for sure. Chris, are you kind of on board with that? You think that's what we're looking at here with Shane Boz?
Yep. I think he's one of the best buys you can get in dynasty right now. And we obviously don't know what it'll look like coming back from surgery, but we know the stuff was there. Like, I think there's few pitchers that I say have like true SP1 upside. And I think that Shane Boz is one of those. So yeah, I'm certainly in agreement on everything there. And I would be buying Boz if I could.
Now, what about Max Meyer? Obviously, one of the higher upside pitching prospects in the minor leagues. Only got 2 starts before everything had to be shut down with him. Still only 24 years old. He'll be 25 next March. So still fairly young. Obviously, big fastball, big slider, you know, solid changeup as well. So now maybe not ace upside, but maybe SP2 upside, which is still speaking very highly. You know, Matt, where do you think Max Meyer ends up? Is he a guy you're buying right now, Martin? And kind of where do you see him kind of falling? You know, assuming he comes back healthy, where do you think he can kind of rise to? You think he's like a top 25 arm, top 40s? Where do you think he is long term?
Well, I hope he doesn't end up a top 25 arm because I've traded him twice in dynasty leagues this offseason in this season so far. I'm just concerned to see how he comes back. He's never been a big, I don't know, he's never been a big command guy for me. Like, I've always had concerns about his command. Now, the velo is kind of, I think, the biggest thing for me. So when he was in the big leagues prior to his injury, he was up about 2 ticks on his fastball on the velo. So I'm curious to see how that plays out coming back from surgery. Obviously, the Marlins are an organization that's been fairly successful producing young pitching. Obviously, look at it, guys like Eury Pérez and, you know, Sandy Alcantara. I've been out on Meyer. I don't really have a good answer for why. I don't love him like I love Shane Boz. Let's put it that way. So he's a guy I've been selling. I can see people being interested in buying him. The upside's definitely there. He's just not a guy that I've been big on long term. So
yeah, I definitely have Boz a lot higher than Meyer, but I am intrigued. Like I said, the stuff is there. You know, if he can throw enough strikes, I think there's, and Miami obviously is a great org for pitching development. So I still have hope that he could be like a, you know, top 25-ish arm. I think that's still a possibility. We'll see. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Meyer here to close out the show?
He's a tough one to evaluate, in my opinion. And, you know, we saw mixed results from him. I still think he can be a solid arm. I don't think he has the upside that Boz does. I will say that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, it depends on the fastball. We know the slider is really good. Like, the slider is absolutely devastating. Will the fastball velo sustain? And can he develop the changeup? I think those questions need to be answered with Max Meyer. Though I will say I do believe that there is really solid potential here. He's flashed it in the past. He's shown that he can be a really solid arm. And I think there's that potential. But, you know, I'm definitely taking Shane Boz over him. But I think Max Meyer is probably a cheaper buy right now. He's been so out of sight, out of mind. Like, nobody talks about Max Meyer. Where I think he could be a decent buy. Is there some bullpen risk? Yeah, maybe. But I think the changeup can be good enough if he throws it enough where he can be a starter. And I'm willing to bank on that upside of the fastball-slider combo. So I do like Max Meyer. But Shane Boz would be my pick if I had the choice of those two.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Boz is a good tier or two or even more above Meyer. But like you said, Chris, I think Meyer is definitely the cheaper acquisition right now. And I think they're both good targets. You know, I still have some Shane Boz shares in Dynasty. So I'm really looking forward to his return next year. Hopefully it's a triumphant return and he gets back on the right track here. But I think that's going to wrap up the show. Martin, thank you so much for coming on. Again, it's been a real pleasure to interact with you and see you kind of break into the industry. Just thanks for coming on. This was a really fun episode.
Yeah, I had a blast. This is one of those, hey, mom, I made it kind of things. I've listened to you guys for a long time and really appreciate, you know, the opportunity to come on and kind of talk baseball with you guys and go through some bounce back candidates and some hopefully trade candidates in Michael Bush's case. But thanks again to Chris and Eric for having me on, and really looking forward to continuing to work with you guys. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think if Michael Bush is not traded this offseason, I'm traveling out to Los Angeles. I'm going to show up at Andrew Friedman's, you know, front door and have a little stern talking to with him for sure. But you can follow all of Martin's work as you should. He has his Substack, which is the link is in his bio, Twitter handle at @m_SKI22. Catch his upcoming work over on Pitcherless as well for the Dynasty content team there. And thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from both Chris and I. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings. Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.